This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our program today focused on the subject of diversity and fairness in awarding city contractors. We had a panel discussion that included Rosemary Swerk, the founder and president of Direct Steel and Construction, and three Chicago aldermen, Alderman Gilbert Villegas, the head of the Latin Group in the City Council, alderman of the 36th Ward on the Northwest Side, Alderman Patrick O'Connor, who's been an alderman since 1983. He represents the North Side community around Foster and Bryn Mawr Clark to the river, and Alderman Roderick Sawyer, alderman of the 6th Ward on the South Side of Chicago. Much of the discussion focused around the role of prime contractors, subcontractors, how can various groups such as women, minorities, and veterans get more. The population of Chicago, they agreed, 32% African American, 29% Latino, 5% Asian, 34% Caucasian. But last year, minority participation in contracts that were awarded by the City of Chicago, 26% went to minorities, 8% to African Americans, 18% to Latinos, and only 6% to women. So there's an ongoing effort, the aldermen agreed, to improve diversity and fairness in awarding contracts. The big issue, they said, is why aren't there more companies, private companies, seeking out minority contractors? Very difficult question to answer. Various rules have to be met, various regulations have to be met. Without denigrating any of our lawyer friends, we have to satisfy an awful lot of attorneys. There were a number of questions about obtaining certification and the fact that it often takes more than a year for a woman, a minority, or a veteran to become certified. The alderman said, in that case, you need someone to help you. Go see your local alderman or see a business or labor group that is dedicated to helping not-for-profits. Increasing participation is a goal. The city has to allow for waivers or else the city would get sued. But they all talked about the proposed airport expansion at O'Hare Field. This will be a tremendous opportunity, they feel, for women, racial minorities, and veterans. The program should give people jobs, put people to work. They agreed that procurement focuses not on companies doing well, but on putting people to work. Private dollars will be where the action and the jobs are in the future. It's a very difficult subject to address, and we think the alderman raised a number of interesting questions, and there were a number of very fascinating questions from the floor. Probably to be continued.
Hi, everyone. It's really an honor to moderate today, and thank you very much, Alderman, for your generous time. Obviously, diversity and fairness in the city has been a long process. But for the benefit of City Club and for the aldermen, let's do just a quick poll. How many of you are either with the city, a government agency, or a non-for-profit? If you could raise your hand. That's great. And then how many of you provide a product or a distributor or manufacturer? So not as many. And how about a service provider, whether it be a general contractor, there we go, consulting, IT, landscaping, janitorial, thank you. And then how many of you are currently doing, of those people that are vendors, or how many are currently doing business with the City of Chicago? And how many are not, and how, okay, wonderful. All right, just a super. And then of those doing work with the City of Chicago, and there were a lot of hands that went up, how many are prime contractors? And how many are subcontractors? And how many of the subcontractors want to be prime contractors? Okay. Yeah. So, you know, this has been, the supplier diversity has been it has a storied past. In 1985, a Chicago Tribune article noted the City of Chicago lagged far behind many other states regarding to overall procurement. The city has 29 departments and 6 agencies, and that's a lot to coordinate. In May of 2015, the city created a procurement reform task force. And this group consisted of about 60 government and non-for-profit leaders who were tasked with achieving the following before 2021. So increasing transparency, decreasing administrative burdens, and lowering barriers. And I believe, Alderman Sawyer, you participated in that task force. Is that accurate?
No.
Okay. But as a result...
We'd like to have done.
Yeah. As a result, 31 recommendations were provided, and a copy of these recommendations and the statuses of 2017 can be found online, but about half of those have been completed. And most of the items completed revolve around writing best practices, establishing coordinating reporting systems. And as Liz Farmer of Governing wrote in December of 2017, the hardest part is yet to come. So this gets to the meat of a lot of the diversity issues. The city of Chicago is roughly comprised of 32% African American, 29% Hispanic, and 5% Asian. A November 2017 report by the Chicago Tribune indicates the city of Chicago achieved its procurement goals of 26% minority and 6% woman-owned. However, only 8% was awarded to African American-owned businesses, while Hispanic achieved 14.5% and Asian American about 4%. So despite the impressive efforts to improve procurement, the audience poll and the statistics would indicate that there may be issues not being addressed or addressed effectively through the recommendations. So moving from the process to results, Alderman, and particularly Alderman Sawyer, you're quoted in the Chicago Sometimes acknowledging, quote unquote, they get paid slow. So what efforts, processes, or results have been implemented to improve, eliminate these obstacles?
Good afternoon, and thank you. First of all, I'd like to say that administratively, I think we're doing a much better job than we were years ago. I think vendors are getting paid a little quicker. I know if we all collectively make nudges, they get paid that much faster. But I don't think that's the underlying problem that we're having, though. I understand that some contractors have an issue with, some don't like to get involved in government contracting because of the slow pay and because of other administrative barriers. I've even had some that don't like to disclose their net worth. Quite a few that don't want to talk about what they have because they kind of feel that it's nobody's business, which is one of the reasons I've administered one of the sections that I'm talking about is eliminating net worth disclosure requirements because, again, it is no one's business. But I think, and we're talking about payment and things like that, there are issues, but I don't think that's the overall issue on why we're not succeeding, particularly in the African-American community, when it comes to government contracting. I'll just say this very quickly. I believe that African Americans are too dependent on government contracting, first of all. But that problem underlies, and I know, are there any developers in the room? Couple, okay, good. And I'm talking to you in particular. Those that have private developments seem not to have enough African American involvement in those developments, particularly as primes or significant artisans. So, steel metal workers, and well, I know we have African-American firms that do this type of work, sheet metal, electricians. I call them the real craftsmen in the construction areas. And I give that challenge to those of you that are developers to allow or not allow, just look at black contractors when you're putting up your developments. You know, I don't want us to be too dependent on government contracts because if government dries up or if you get too successful, you get kicked out of the program and you don't have work. So I think those are the issues that we have. And I think Latino contractors, women contractors, all experience those same things. And I think that's the challenge that we have going forward.
So one of the things you talked about was eliminating net worth disclosure requirements. So, you know, I can tell you from personal experience, the city of Chicago doesn't recognize me as a woman. I can't get certified because my net worth requirements are too high, so I become too successful for the program. So
did you change sexes?
Not to the best of my knowledge.
You're still a woman. I mean, and I think that's where some of the breakdown occurs.
So what in those 31 recommendations, there was nothing in there to address it. So what do you propose?
Well, again, very simply, I think because, you know, we still have systemic racism and classism and sexism in the United States and the world, I don't think you as a woman contractor should be diminished because you have a certain net worth requirement. I don't think that should be anyone's business. As we're talking about other things, like Gil and I are working on a few things with the SBI, NBI initiatives, again, but part of that, you're going to have to start disclosing. And my assumption is that a lot of people aren't going to apply for these things, but they don't want people to know what they have. You know, we have always, blacks and Latinos, have always been relegated because we're in these programs. We have to say what we have. And when we have too much, they'll say, oh, stop. I mean, what is that about? I don't understand that. Aren't we all supposed to be successful? Aren't we all supposed to go as high as we possibly can? So we're telling companies, and I see a couple of my old friends in the room, Paul King and others in the room, that they got to a certain level and they either have to stop doing work, buy a bigger house, or, I mean, and effectively diminish their net worth in order for them to keep working. And I think that problem, that's a systemic problem in what we have.
Right, and in all fairness, it's my understanding back in 2003 there was a lawsuit and the judge asked the question, you mean if Oprah Winfrey and Michael Jordan came in right now and said that they were submitting for the certification that they'd get it? And the answer was yes. And as a result, the network requirements were set up. But those network requirements really preclude, at least from a general contractor's perspective, the ability to, if you're at that maximum level, you can't get the financing, you can't get the bonding in order to do the project. So it's a vicious cycle. Let's talk a little bit about the certification program, because even on the federal level, the certification program does provide an opening for diverse suppliers to play on a more level playing field. But obviously, there's been many reports and convictions of companies applying and being granted certification for which they're not entitled. And certainly that makes the city's work to provide certification much more difficult. Certifying agencies such as WeBank, WBDC, and the state of Illinois, CMS, have made substantial progress, substantially decreasing the amount of time it takes and streamlining the process of legitimate businesses to obtain their certifications. What about the city of Chicago? I mean, I've even just talking with several people as we were walking in today, the process is taking a year, if not longer, and the feedback, even though that they're trying to get the feedback, what can they do to get over that hurdle?
Well, first and foremost, I think that if anyone is applying, almost any amount of time is too long, because you want to get in business, you want to get in play, and so it's difficult. Part of what the problem is what your question began with, is that for a long period of time, certification of businesses that were not entitled to certification was commonplace. And so we were granting certification to businesses that shouldn't have been, and then there's investigations and indictments and all the rest of it. And so the first and foremost thing that we want to do is, while we'd like to do it quickly, we'd like to do it correctly. And that's part of it. But I have a business in our ward that was a woman-owned business. The certification was taking a tremendous amount of time. The interplay between her company and the city of Chicago was strained at best, because you're dealing with someone who is looking at your stuff, and if they're not being supervised correctly, if they're not following up correctly, that thing can just sit on that person's desk for a long time. And so what tends to happen is the people who go for help get moved up in line, as opposed to basically having it go through the system the way it should, which would be expeditiously and correctly. Now, we have made great strides in the last, I would say, maybe 3-4 years in correcting it, and it has been shortened. But clearly, we could do better. Part of it is that the certification process oftentimes requires additional feedback from the applicant. And if the applicant isn't on top of that, getting that back, mm-hmm. if it comes back slowly, that application recedes back. And so the one thing I would say is that while we're trying to do it better, the applicant needs to be diligent, they have to stay on top of it, they have to respond immediately. And they shouldn't be shy about going to the people who are in charge of the department, or going to their local alderman and saying, I need some help. I need somebody to take a look at this and try and help me move it along.
Okay. And if you're a prime contractor, a lot of the city government requirements that you subcontract to diverse suppliers. So if prime contractors indicate they're not able to find minority subcontractors, they are allowed to apply for waivers. Certainly, contractors must demonstrate good faith efforts in attempting to meet those diverse participation goals. However, if waivers are necessary, are there requirements and indication perhaps the procurement process may not address either the procurement method, the standards for the waiver, and or the qualification skill set of the minority vendors?
So what I wanted to do was go back and address a statement you made earlier regarding the goals that are attained by African American and Latino and Asian firms. And so if I got the numbers correctly, you said 8 for African American, 14 for Hispanic, and 4 for Asian. And so I always talk with Rod about, what about the other 68%? Why is it that we're always stuck in a box? So I'm not going to fall for the okey doke or fall for the argument that the African Americans are getting too much and we're getting too less and vice versa. I'm looking at the bigger picture of 68%, and that's why Rod and I, we worked on an ordinance that talked about private development, where initially we threw out the number of 66% for participation. And I remember the media calling saying, why 66%? That's crazy. And I
not
said,
just
well,
the media, right.
Yeah. And I said, well, they started at zero. So you figure if they started at zero, we started at 66, we'll meet somewhere in the middle. And as a result, the mayor issued an executive order for planning that got to 30%. So we were successful in addressing those issues with private development. Now, when these goals are set up, there has to be the waiver process in place, or else we're going to get sued. So, but we also have to make sure that we're challenging the industry and making sure that they understand that we, the city council, want to have more participation. When you take a look at the members of the city caucus, we represent over 60% of the population in the city of Chicago. So together, we're not the minority. But what we're trying to do is we're just trying to make sure that our communities are participating on these public projects. And so the waiver process that's in place, as long as compliance is making sure that all the boxes are checked and making sure that they did truly do a good faith effort, I'm okay with that. But what I'm not okay with is this argument of setting these goals and then the contractors or the professional service folks having the ability to get to that number and not go over. It's 26 and 6. Man, I got to 26.01 and they can't go over. Well, we always say that the 26 and 6 is the floor. It's not the ceiling. So what we want to do is we need help from the industries to make us be successful, because ultimately, you know, at Congress they appropriate funds, at the state legislature they appropriate funds, and we appropriate funds. And as the bodies become more diverse, we want to make sure that our constituents are participating on these public projects.
So this is a question that was submitted, pre-submitted. And what safeguards, and it follows along the same lines, what safeguards are there that the diverse subcontractors actually get the business? I have been part of contracts with the city and the prime never honored the commitments.
Where they never honored their commitments?
This is what this read.
Well, you all should be talking to Gil and I, really, that that's something that we want to hear about and obviously are concerned about. We've heard about years gone by where there were contractors that were certified in name only, and they were more interested in getting a check than actually doing the work. I must say, I'm proud to say with the companies that we have now, with these young African Americans and Latinos coming up, and I'll throw a couple of names out, Boa Construction, old veterans Construction. These are up-and-coming companies that are more willing, interested in doing the work and being recognized for their work as opposed to what their participation is and what their, you know, payout's going to be. So I think we're into a new genre now, a new generation, a renaissance, if you will, of companies who want to be acknowledged for the work that they do, and they want to do more of it. And when I talked to a good young friend of mine, Boa Nosa from Boa Construction, I know he's doing great work at the airport, for example, getting accolades out there. We want him to do more. We want young people like that to get more involved. And when we talk about creating millionaires, these are the type of young people that we want to see be successful. There are companies out there in the IT sphere, women-owned contractors that are doing the work, that are really putting it in. We want them to be acknowledged and want them to get more work. How do we do this without violating laws, but at the same time increasing everyone's capacity? I had lunch with a gentleman a couple of weeks ago, and he told me this. I want to say this very quickly. He said, Rod, I appreciate what you're doing, but let me just tell you this real quickly. He said, Rod, I've done a quick study on the African-American contracts in the Chicagoland area. He said their total bonding capacity was about $400 million total. He said in the city of Chicago, we had about $16 billion worth of work last year. That's where your disconnect is going to come up with. Where are the companies that can have the capacity to get up and gear up to do more work? And we want that. I'm not falling back off what we're talking about. I think that's actually encouraging us to help create companies that have more capacity, that can do bigger work, that can bring the younger companies up, and they can do more work. And then it's a lot of work here for everyone. We need to just be a part of what's going on.
So let's talk a little bit about the airport expansion, $8.5 billion, pretty impressive. And they're already talking about supplier diversity, and most of that is coming through the subcontractors. Is there any thought with regard to doing set-asides either for small businesses or like the federal government does, yeah, has women-owned small businesses?
There's a little project at the airport. What Rod and I and Pat Dow, what we did was we introduced, with the guidance of Alderman O'Connor as well, we introduced a ordinance that created a subcommittee or a committee, oversight committee, that will meet on a quarterly basis throughout the term of the project to make sure that as barriers come up, as issues come up, where we have successes, we can replicate those. We introduced this ordinance in the past, and so right now we're in the process of forming it so that way we can get ahead of this, because this is a multi-year project and a ton of money that's going to be available for contractors and developers, professional services, attorneys, bonding counsel, I mean, a bunch of things. So we're going to be consistently looking at the opportunities for minority women and veteran-owned businesses throughout the duration of the project and working with aviation, leaders from aviation and leaders from Chief Procurement Office to make sure that, again, if there's legislation needs to be introduced, we'll introduce it. If there's policy changes, we'll get those done. So that's going to be a work that we're going to be continuing to monitor throughout the duration of the project.
And I want to say this. Our people think that, and we teasingly call Pat and other members with Pat the gray hair caucus, but Pat
not teasing. It's true.
I want to congratulate Pat and others that worked with us hand in hand. Alderman Zalewski, I see him in the audience. When we raised that issue, they responded right away and said, you know what, you're right. Let's work out something so that we could, you know, trust but verify what's going on as things go forward. And I really had to give a shout out to Pat for working with us to get this thing done, because people always think that we're not working with everyone, but we are. We're trying to make it a collaborative where everyone has a voice. I appreciate Pat and others for listening to us. Because we are making some noise, and we want to make sure that those of us that are out there that have been disenfranchised in the past get an opportunity. And they're actually working with us to make that happen.
I appreciate that, Rod. And I think it's important for folks not to just focus on the idea that these programs give companies opportunities. What these programs do is give people jobs.
That's right.
And that's the more important part. It's nice that people who own companies will become richer. It's nice that they will be able to afford more and be able to do more. But factually speaking, the goal of these things is to put people to work. If you look at what's been going on at O'Hare Airport for the last couple of decades and what will go on for the next decade or so, there are people who are tradesmen. There are people in the union workforce that could spend their entire adult work life working at O'Hare Airport, being paid by private dollars at a wage that is livable and beyond, And we're doing this with our goals because we're doing it with non-federal money. If it were federal money, these goals would be much different and much more harsh in allowing us to do the things that we want to do and achieve the goals we want to achieve. And so while the focus is in procurement is the company that's getting to get it, the goal is not to make new millionaires, right? The goal is that that person who owns that company is going to put people to work, and that's going to lift up the entire city of Chicago. If you look at what's out there now, there's a tremendous vista of cranes that are up above and at the building heights in downtown Chicago. That's all good jobs for people that live in our communities and some of the surrounding communities. But factually speaking, we can be a catalyst, but those jobs are the private jobs. Those jobs are where it's all private dollars and all private money, and that's where we hope that our programs will provide opportunities for companies to do business with us, but not to be dependent on us forever, but to move into that private dollar area so more small companies can move into the space that they've vacated so that we can continue to bring companies up. This is not – government is a great source of funding for some companies, but government should be a catalyst. It shouldn't be the end of the road.
So along those lines of bringing in the smaller contractors, even the Chicago's former deputy procurement officer and now the Illinois Tollways chief of diversity and strategic development is reported to have said, let alone smaller firms, they can't afford to deal with the bureaucracy. And even when you go into some of the bid procurements, it's a three-page single line checklist of those documents that need to be completed. What is being done to address some of the laborious administrative work that's required, if anything?
I would say that the reason why they're three pages or three paragraphs long is because you start getting attorneys involved in the discussion, and so they're always risk averse, and so they're like, well, let's check, make sure this, make sure that. So I think that sorry, attorneys, that's the truth, though. So
speaking on those.
Sorry, it's the truth. So, yeah. So right. Exactly, get paid by the word. So we do have to make it easier for contractors to do business with us, but when they're acting as a sub first, that does expose them to how government works and doesn't work, and so at least allows them an opportunity. I think the way that we begin to teach those new firms is through mentor-protege programs where we're working with these smaller firms and then also having the general contractors or the prime consultants mentor these firms so that way we can begin to have a diverse pool of applicants.
The other route that they can take is there are some tremendous business associations out there that are either racially centric or ethnically centric, whose goal is to bring in smaller businesses and help them to breach those walls that make it difficult. So contractors associations, vendors associations, almost all of them that are not-for-profit have a component that helps companies to overcome obstacles. The city, in a small way, up in our procurement department, has a help desk as well. So that when you go in, if you are having issues, in theory, you can go to that desk and you can get some help and understand those documents a little better and make sure that you're handing them in a way that makes them acceptable. But the associations that are out there for these entities are a great opportunity, and quite honestly, they're great advocates as well.
Great. So here's a question that was submitted, and if you do have these blue cards, if you do have questions, if someone can help collect them, Amanda? Great. So this is one. The programs, quote-unquote, were created for those that were historically discriminated against, in this case, blacks, Native Americans, seem to advantage everyone but the intended beneficiaries, ? How are blacks trailing Latinos, and what is being done for equity?
I'll start with that one, yes. And one, I don't, like Gil said earlier, I'm not trying to make it a race, black versus Latino, but I, as chair of the Black Caucus, I do advocate for black causes, and the number was upsetting to me when I saw it. Not that it was lower than the Latinos, but it was just low. The fact that 8% out of a 20%, 26% goal was low. So we went out and we talked to contractors, and a lot of contractors responded in kind. For example, I got calls, I don't want to bid on government contracts, you know, for whatever reason, whether the pay was different, whether it's too intrusive. Some feel that they are not ready to bid. So Gil and I, we've worked on initiatives where we can get smaller contractors in to bid on more. We're trying to make it as accessible as possible for ethnic contractors to have a place at the table at the City of Chicago. But it is a challenge. And it's not just a challenge for lack of trying. It's a challenge on both sides. It's a challenge on the city side to make sure that they're more inclusive. And it's also a challenge on the contractor side to make sure that they're getting documents in on time and really adhering to the schedules that are put in place by procurement, because procurement is really trying. I talk to Jamie at least 2 to 3 times a week, every week, about what we can do to get those numbers up, about making things open to more African-American contractors. And it is a struggle, but we're going to keep pushing, and we're not going to give up on it.
Yeah. And here's a question. I think we touched on it earlier, but it must be painful. How do I get an answer from the city of Chicago on my WBE certification that I submitted 1 year ago? What do I need to do?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, you got to call somebody who can be an advocate for you. So if you have someone like a panel like this, or you have an alderman that you know, or quite honestly, that's a great way to try, is just get a hold of either your alderman, and if you're not located within the city of Chicago, get a hold of an alderman who would be willing to make an inquiry for you. Because if you're waiting for a year, I'm assuming that there has been interplay. I'm assuming that there has been some back and forth. And so at some point in time, there just needs to be follow-up. But if you applied a year ago and you just haven't heard anything, there's something drastically wrong there. So I just think, you know, the circumstance would dictate that you'd have to get somebody to come and advocate, or quite honestly, go to the department and sit down and find out. And if you're not satisfied with the answer, then you can lodge a complaint with the department and they'll look into it. As I said, the woman that owned a business in my community ended up, she felt she just had a very bad personality conflict with the individual who had her application, and she felt that they were sitting on it intentionally. And we went to the law department and they looked into it and they investigated the thing, ended up transferring it to another person, not because they had a finding that there was some like real slowing down intentionally on that guy's part, but because they wanted the person to feel like they were listening to her and that they were giving her a fresh start. So this unfortunately is not a process that you can feed into a computer and get a result. It is a very labor-intense investigatory process, and that's why it takes a while. But again, you have to follow up.
I would just say that if that person's here, Magdalena, please stand up. Magdalena from my office, talk to her, and we'll make an inquiry for you.
Very nice. All right, and we touched on this a little briefly too. With all the new opportunities in construction and technology in the city of Chicago, why not, as a trial run, remove the revenue caps so that minority firms can actually build real wealth in Chicago? So,
get no fight from me.
Yeah.
I signed on to that ordinance, just so you know.
Yeah. What are the new strategies being implemented to engage black communities, workforce, and non-union contractor alike?
Sorry, you said non-union?
It says workforce and non-union contractors alike.
I know that we try to do as much as we can as far as outreach is concerned. When I have contractors, and it's interesting because I've only been there 7 years now, and I'm just starting to have contracts. So I have to talk to my colleagues oftentimes to find out what's the best protocol. And one of my favorite aldermen to talk to, I'll put her name out here, has been Pat Dow. Because Pat Dow had a ward that has transformed itself, and she's got a part of a ward that was struggling that has transformed, and a part of the South Loop, which is booming. And up until my point, I had no construction whatsoever up until the last few years. So I would ask people like Pat and others that have been going through it, what's your protocol? How do you deal with, you know, making sure that enough black people are working on your project? You know, how do you push to, you know, push legally and ethically on making sure that you get black participation in a significant way on projects? And these are public works projects in your area. And I've learned fast. I've learned from others. I think I saw Walter around here earlier. Walter Burnett, who's actually been very, very helpful in giving me instruction on how to deal with it, making sure that you get black people working. He has some companies over on the west side, for example, that do a phenomenal job in workforce placement and workforce development. So I learned from others. I learned from my colleagues that have been around a little longer than I have. And I try to implement those policies and try to make a twist on my own and make it my own. So we do the best. Again, we do whatever we can.
I would also add that when contractors at some point are looking to get into the public sector, that they have to make a business decision as to whether or not they want to be with a collective bargaining union or not. So there's no – all the project labor agreements that are in place, if you're going to participate in public projects, chances are you're going to have to make a business decision of whether or not you want to be a union contractor. And the city council, we've been very supportive of project labor agreements. And so those are decisions that you'll have to make.
All right. I did not ask for this question, but I got a kick out of it, so I'm going to read it anyway. If the argument for the goals and participation is based on race population, why is the women's goal held at 6% when they are 51% of the population?
So I think that when we set goals, it's not generally understood that the court system requires goals to be attainable based upon a study that is done in what we have is a six-county area. If we just use Chicago or Cook County, those goals would be significantly lower because the capacity to achieve those goals would be less likely. Those goals are derived from a study that is done roughly every 5 years. I think the last one was 2016. I think we're due around 2020, 2021. It costs over $1 million to have them look and determine what the local economy is and what the businesses in the local economy can support in terms of public projects. And then those goals are based upon the statistics that come out of that study. If those goals are artificially inflated and then determined not to be achievable, that program gets struck down. And not only does the program get struck down, but then all of the people that would be bidding under that program no longer have the opportunity. So while we at the City Council, for instance, in the goal that relates to women, the last time that this thing was brought before the council, the recommendation of the study was slightly lower than what we ended up with, because we as a council felt we're going to try and push it up higher. But the Corporation Council was very clear that if we pushed it up artificially high and well beyond what that study said, we jeopardized the entire program. And so it's not a question of what the population is made up of. It's what the business owners out there are made up of and what their capacity is to perform those public jobs. And we have a tension that exists because we have members of the council that would like to push these things into the stratosphere, and you have lawyers and others that basically would not want to see this struck down. Our program has been struck down in the past, and as a result, each time the court comes in and modifies what our program is or strikes down a portion of our program, we are now saddled not with a legislative answer but with a court-determined answer. And that makes it harder on us. So it's a cute question, but it's not based upon the criteria with which we have to arrive at these goals.
And this is a statement. It's like the gift that keeps giving. Please let the alderman know the 1 year for WBE certification is not atypical. Thank you.
Magdalena, you're going to be busy.
Okay. All right, so why do prime contractors expect subcontractors to work at a 2 to 3% profit margin?
Now that I'm not...
Well, I would say that, for example, when I was at IDOT, there would be an issue where there was a lot of bid shopping that occurred and where prime contractors would put their team together, propose the bid, and be the low bidder, and then they have 7 days to cure it. And what that meant was 7 days, the prime contractor would go tell the subs, guess what, we won the job, guess what, you got to take 10% off, which in turn was really eating into the ability to grow capacity and their profit margins. With all of the competition that's out there now and all the projects that are going to be coming up, I think it's going to be a good time to be an MBE, a WBE, or VBE, because this is going to be a lot of work. And you're going to have a city council that's out there that's going to be really challenging the administration, challenging the industries to make sure that the people that are getting the work reflect like the people of the city of Chicago. So the 2-3 percent, I mean, that's a business decision that you ultimately make. It depends on the time of season. If you want to get your work on the books early in the season, that's where it's a lot more competition. If you want to try to wait, there's a little bit more profit then. But then you're struggling throughout that summer season. So those are business decisions that you have to make. But as it relates to bid shopping, we have a handle on that through the city.
In this question, do you want to go?
Well, just very quickly, I just don't think that, and I agree with Gil, everything he stated, but I just don't think that we should be forcing unreasonable profit margins down our subcontractors' throats like that. And I think that would be very irresponsible for a prime contractor to do something like that. And that's something we should be looking into a little bit more.
And this is a little bit aside from the topic, but what will it take for Chicago to adopt the International Building Code? It is hindering the development of transit-oriented developments on the south and west sides.
I've had a challenge with transit-oriented development as being an alderman that abuts the red line for three stops. I have been unable to secure adequate development at my train stops. And I'm confused, to be honest with you, where 7,000 to 10,000 people a day travel, and currently I have no one getting in those pockets of those transit riders every day. And it's frustrating. The only people that seem to get it is McDonald's. They're at every one of my train stops. You know, but it's a smart move. I think it's intelligent on their part, but I think it's lacking foresight on others. And one developer did tell me, I had him come to my office. I have vacant lots next to 69th Street, vacant lots next to 79th Street. I was trying to encourage some transit, some TOD, and he said, well, Rod, let me tell you something, and you got a great idea, but this is the problem. My concrete costs are the same no matter if I build it on 79th Street or on Fulton Market, but I get paid more to build it on Fulton Market. So unless you have a subsidy or a TIF or something that can bridge that gap, you're going to have trouble finding adequate developers to build that site. So, and I happen to be in an area that's sans TIFs. So it is a bit of a challenge for me to try to get someone interested enough to get in the pockets of those 7,000 to 10,000 people a day, which I think is still manageable, but they're telling me otherwise.
Two questions, very similar. Does the city of Chicago have a council like that at the state of Illinois BEP council that address and maintain and enforce diverse supplier issues?
Well, we have a workforce development. Obviously our budget system, our committee system that deals with the different budgeting and expenditure programs, but not one specifically that deals with that. I will say, though, that our procurement department has some significant programming that they're doing in the area of small business, not racially or ethnically oriented, but just size of business.
Size of business.
And that program also has been very successful in providing business opportunities for minority and women-owned businesses. Out of the 100% of the dollars that have been given away in those programs, about 17% have gone to non-minority, non-women-owned business, and the balance has gone to what you would say would ordinarily be a target market for the racially and ethnically oriented goals and the gender oriented goals. So we're trying to approach the problem in a variety of ways, not just with goals that are racial, ethnic, or gender specific.
And as you can see, this is not a simple problem or issue to address. But thank you very much to all three of you again for giving us your time, your ear, and your efforts to find as equitable a solution as possible.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.